Hey, and welcome to the next Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski. I got my co-host here, Dr. Carl Nadolski Jr.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about the recent study that came out that compared the effects of a daily chronic caloric restriction type of diet to that of a calorically restricted, time-restricted feeding or time-restricted eating pattern that just came out in the New England Journal. A bunch of people were talking about it last week, the intermittent fasting. I would call them zealots. They were like, whoa, whoa, whoa. They kind of looked like the conspiracy theory Charlie from Always Sunny. I don't even watch this show, but it's a meme that I always use, kind of like pointing all over the place, trying to show why the study was worthless or whatever, why it didn't work.
I didn't even know where that was from. What, the one where he's doing all the calculations?
He's like kind of pointing
crazy calculations.
Looks, yeah, he looks kind of crazy. He's kind of pointing, and I use it all the time. That's probably where you've seen it.
So, but yeah, it is where I see it. I just didn't know where it was from originally.
So, yeah, I've never seen the show.
Now he's trying to explain how the study was wrong.
Yeah, right? And, we're going to go over the practical implications. So maybe, Dr. Carl, could you go over just the brief of the study?
Yeah, well, let's first talk about, because we haven't in our discussions talked a lot about intermittent fasting and time-restricted feeding anyway. So what are those? And why are people even talking about them? So in our space, these are different methods of dietary efforts to treat obesity and obesity-related complications. So just a few basics. Intermittent fasting, basically, is a term used for different dietary efforts where people will often do, say, every other day, they just won't eat much. Oftentimes 500 calories or fewer. Is that your interpretation also?
Like alternate day. That's a kind of an alternate day
intermittent fast. And then there are the other common one studied for intermittent fasting is, 5 days of normal dietary intake versus two that are kind of fasting, 0 to 500 calories a day. Those have been studied a lot. The other version that we're going to talk about mostly today is the time-restricted feeding, where what we call ad libitum, meaning you kind of eat what you usually would up to what you want, is restricted. You force yourself to only eat in a certain amount of time. And the ways these have been studied matter for what the study is going to talk about. But basically, if you get up and you eat breakfast at 6 a.m. and you eat a snack at 10 p.m., that's not a lot of time to fast between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. And so what these dietary efforts do, plans do, is they restrict your time to say maybe you only eat between 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. or something like that, a 7, 8, 9, 10-hour window. The bottom line is,
for most
what
of us,
can these do?
Most of us are... But some other people, so the most of us are in the fed state during the day. We only go, 3-5 hours without eating. Proponents of fasting say that we have to have much longer periods of time and not just overnight of periods to let our guts rest, to let our certain molecular changes in our muscles and everywhere in our body changed for health purposes and maybe for hormonal purposes for weight loss. So, and there's multiple ways of doing this.
Well, and also beyond just weight loss and metabolic health, there are purported benefits for even mental health, I think. If you look at if people who want to read a real science-y sort of review, there was a New England Journal of Medicine review on different types of fasting and the potential benefits on health and aging just from a couple of years ago, actually, that we could talk about.
That was 2019.
Yeah.
In fact, just a real aside, some people are like, you need to read this study. This study shows it. It's a review.
It's not a study.
I wouldn't call it a
review of all the studies.
So that's what it's a review, and it's kind of, it's expert opinion. In a little bit more of a formal way than listening to our podcast, I'd say.
Yeah.
So what did this study look at? There are two different groups.
Yeah. They randomized 139 patients who have obesity to either a time restricted eating plan where they were only allowed to eat between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. along with a planned caloric restriction, by the way, or a daily caloric restriction alone. And they did this for 12 months. It was 1500 to 1800 calories per day for men, 1200 to 1500 calories per day for women, which is a very common generic sort of estimated energy plan for people. And basically they just wanted to know the differences in weight change and waist circumference, most importantly, body fat and some other metabolic risk factors. Now, you know, we could get all into the details of the study. But I think one important thing, and I'd have to look into the fine details, but their habitual, meaning their usual restricted window, I guess was already only about like 10 hours. So they weren't like eating 16 hours a day. You know what I mean? They weren't in the fed state 16 hours a day on average, but they went from like an average of 10 hours to 8 hours, I think is what they said. And they did this for 12 months.
The important distinction in this though, I think the important distinction with this is that they both were specifically calorically restricted.
Yeah. So there was already a plan.
And they wanted to see if adding the window in, which again, if it might have been a smaller window, not as much of a small window as some would want, but just adding that in, does it have some other beneficial effect in terms of total body weight loss and some of these other metabolic parameters? And in right. the end, they found what?
Basically not statistically significant, but both groups lost weight actually. So at 12 months, and this is pretty good weight loss if for people who have followed us online, and we talk about how much weight people lose with lifestyle interventions. On average, 8 kilogram weight lost in the time restricted group and 6.5 kilograms in the non-time restricted group. Now, that sounds like a lot.
Did they give
a
percentage of total body weight? What's the starting average, I guess, average weight? Because that's so we always talk about this 5 to 10% weight loss, pretty good. Total body weight loss being pretty good, 5 to 10% with lifestyle. These newer drugs that we have, you know, they're starting to get up to 15 and now maybe over 20%. But
yeah, this is
pretty good.
Yeah, no, it's pretty good because most weight loss studies, it always seems like they're around 100 kilograms. So the kilogram usually is very similar to the percent weight loss. In this specifically, they were about 88 kilograms. So actually, that amount of weight loss
is actually pretty darn good. Percent.
Yeah. And so, so people who do lifestyle interventions and think that, you know, dietary efforts don't work, if done in a very intensive manner, they do work, at least in the short term. We know that the hormones work against people, and these are things we can talk about even anecdotally, but with time restricted feeding and intermittent fasting. But in this case, pretty darn good weight loss for both groups. Now, it sounds like numerically the absolute average number was a little bit better in the time restricted group. It didn't meet statistical significance, meaning essentially the chance of that happening you know, is possible. And so the bottom line, the conclusion, is that the regimen of time-restricted eating was not necessarily more beneficial with regard to reduction in body weight, body fat, or any of the other metabolic risk factors they looked into than just the straight-up daily caloric restriction. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of what I would expect is that, hey, it's mostly all energy balance. If you find that restricting yourself into a certain window of time, or, you know, if you're going to the alternate day fasting type of approach, if you look at an average energy balance over the week, and it's for some reason, the fasting or time restriction helps you eat fewer calories, you're going to lose weight. And I'm not convinced. This study surely shows that the evidence, there's not really much evidence to say that does any better for purely weight loss and probably metabolic related conditions to weight, that there's really any much benefit. So our kind of practical approach is like, hey, I have patients that try the daily chronic restricted type of diets, and then they go to a more of an intermittent fasting. If they are able to sustain it and they really buy into it, they find that it does work better for them in certain individuals. Some other people, I personally have tried it. I hate it. I love breakfast. I like eating a little bit of breakfast in the morning. I don't want to ruin social, like my wife and I would go out for breakfast, and it's like, nope, can't ruin my fast. Like that doesn't that doesn't matter for me. But for other people, it might fit into their lifestyle really well. Now, again, it's something that, like, hey, if they stop doing it, I have other patients that do well for a couple of years and they stop doing the whole time restricted feeding or alternate day type of approach, the 5 and 2 or whatever you want to say. Then they start regaining the weight because they start eating more in the periods that they were fasting before. So, a real practical approach is like, it's probably mostly due to the energy restriction. Yeah, overall energy balance.
Yeah, and that's what all the different true, you know, intensive analyses have said. This is a tool that does work. So the meta-analyses of them just by themselves really show that, you know, time-restricted feeding and intermittent fasting result in a reduced energy intake and thus the resulting weight loss and the cardiometabolic benefits. Now, there have been a lot of animal studies in the past where they really got thinking, oh, hey, this you know, the metabolic switch going from that fed state to being a little bit of keto, you know, making some ketone bodies has some, you know, metabolic benefits. I think maybe in rats, maybe less so in mice, maybe some thoughts in primates. In humans, though, it's been a mixed bag. The studies have been fairly variable. We all know that obesity and cardiometabolic risk is a problem for chronic health in society. And chronic caloric restriction is beneficial. Losing weight is beneficial. Doing it is easier said than done. We have hormones that work against us, make us want to eat more. But this is a tool to consider, which results in energy balance or energy deficit. And helps with weight loss and cardiometabolic health. Whether it does a lot more, just really, really head to head, the studies just don't really prove it.
Right. So if you're calorically restricting, regardless in during the whole day versus in a small window, probably not a huge benefit. This one didn't see a statistical benefit. You know, people can argue that there might be a trend in there somewhere, but honestly, from a true practical standpoint, I don't see a major clinical significance. Of doing it right. Beyond if it helps you do
exactly.
It.
Exactly. And that's the thing. A lot of people do feel like it does. And the yes. Other thing with these is I go back to this all the time. These different dietary sort of different strategies do not have to be mutually exclusive from each other. So we can be cutting carbs, cutting fat, eating more Mediterranean, whole foods, less processed. And we can still try some like intermittent fasting plans and time restricted feeding plans. We can do it all in any individual situation to personalize therapy that's going to help any person adhere to their efforts. That's the whole key. So I think that's always my most important takeaway when these studies show, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I sent out an email. If you're listening, I got all your emails. I asked for questions for this podcast and pretty much everybody had very similar. Are there health benefits beyond the energy restriction? In humans? I don't know.
Maybe some real subtle things. Maybe.
Maybe.
At the most.
Maybe. But it's going to be extremely hard to tease out the differences.
Yeah.
Because we're a little bit biased because we are obesity like metabolic, we're looking at adiposity, and most of this stuff comes from energy excess and adiposity. You remove that, regardless if it's daily chronic restricted versus intermittent fasting, different types, time restricted versus alternate day, whatever you're doing, it's coming from the energy excess. You find a way to decrease the energy, whether you're doing it in a time restricted fashion or alternate day versus just somehow finding ways to eat fewer calories chronically during the day. It doesn't matter. The benefits come from restriction in energy intake. So I think we should just need to get, there are these zealots out there. I could start naming and shaming. I mean, I don't know. Are we allowed to do that? Can we do that? Or we start
what are they going to do? We don't have any money to get sued. We're not making any money yet from this, are we?
Not yet.
Not yet. All right. Send your money too.
Yeah. So, I mean, but these guys are zealots.
I don't mind calling out a person who has no expertise in obesity and diabetes and went down a different route into nephrology and is a kidney doctor, but suddenly is making millions of dollars forcing everyone to think you have to fast. I don't mind calling Jason that Fung. Guy out.
Let's just call it Jason Fung. So guy's a nephrologist. Now, you know, I suppose he could be you could call him an obesity specialist if he's been doing this for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I shouldn't be such a jerk about it, because you can be any specialist and then go on and because obesity affects so many things, but he just doesn't have that background.
So here's the things people like, but he's helped so many people. I've had patients go, I did what he said and I lost a lot of weight. I'm like, yes, I agree. If you fast and you lower your energy intake. But the problem is the way he frames it is that you have to do this.
Yeah.
I've also had people harmed by his methods because they thought they were broken because they were fasting.
Yeah.
They're like, I don't understand. I can't lose weight because I'm not eating in between these other times. It's like, well, you're still getting way too much energy intake during that period of time, and then I have to help them figure it out. So
you know what? Do you remember me telling you a story about, I think maybe one of my patients with type 1 diabetes who ended up going into DKA because or something? Well, that or I think he scared them away from taking their insulin because he blames everything on insulin and says the only way you can fix insulin is by fasting. Now, don't get me wrong, your insulin if you have obesity and type 2 diabetes and you have high insulin, insulin resistance, it does go down with fasting. It goes down with caloric restriction. We see that in bariatric surgery and the sham sort of trials of that.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
part of it. But, you know, but don't stop taking your insulin if you have type 1 diabetes, please. This also goes to our usual disclaimer. Please don't make any medication changes until you talk to your physician. That's going to be our common theme.
You're going to see a lot of these zealots out there. You're listening to us, so you're probably not following any of the zealots, or you used to, and now you follow us. That's kind of how it works. But you're going to see these people. There's so many other ones that are just like him out there that are basically saying, no, you have to fast. It's not the calories. It's like, no, it is the calories. It's all the energy. Fasting helps you shift those calories into a smaller amount of time, so you don't get that many overall. That's pretty much it. There may be some with circadian rhythms and chrononutrition.
Yeah.
There may be some cherries on top of like, hey, maybe we shouldn't eat our largest meal right before bed. There is biological plausibility there.
Yeah.
So don't say I'm like saying that stuff doesn't matter. But total energy balance probably matters the most. Yeah. There's probably a cherry on top, though.
Yeah.
I think that's reasonable.
And again, in the context of everything else, this is probably not the low-hanging fruit. You know, we have people who still struggle with drinking sugary beverages. We have people eating out all the time, highly processed, refined foods. This is just one tool in the toolbox that can definitely help people stick to the energy reduction in their diet. And maybe it has some other benefits in different ways, but they're not definitively laid out in the data. The data are mixed. So you don't have to do it by any means of the imagination.
Other people were asking about insulin, insulin sensitivity, blood sugars, maybe gut health. We're not gastroenterologists, but we are physicians. But we get into that because of this zealotry everywhere, just trying to make up stuff about different benefits of different programs out there. But okay, so from an insulin sensitivity standpoint, is there a benefit? Does there seem to be a benefit beyond caloric restriction and reduction of adiposity?
Again, hard to really say based upon all the studies that there's anything beyond what a perfectly matched caloric reduction would show. Now, there is a meta-analysis in type 2 diabetes recently published. I'd have to dig into the details, look at all the studies. It suggested maybe there was a hint of a benefit, but again, it's hard for them to match perfectly. So like you looked at like this study we just talked about, there was about, you know, 1.5 to 2% absolute percent appearing benefit of the time restricted feed, but not statistically significant. Now, if we meta-analyze all these, and they're not perfectly controlled, remember, these people are free living. They're not in a metabolic ward with Kevin Hall.
Yeah. Right?
So if it truly is helping to do that, then they do have reduced energy intake, and there might be some of those other benefits. But absolutely controlled and matched head to head, I haven't been convinced by the studies yet.
Yeah,
maybe it's
So there was another study that just came out in the Journal of Obesity that you posted that pretty much very similar results. We're just going to mention it here because it just kind of goes along with this one that just came out too.
Yeah, and this actually had more to do with the timing. So you talk about the circadian rhythms and when that window of fasting could be. So quickly, they wanted to try looking at early time-restricted eating, again, plus the caloric restriction. I think all these trialists have figured out, okay, so this is just a way to restrict calories, so now we're going to start trying to do both, okay? So kind of combining it, because that is what is the one definitive thing we know. So they did daily caloric restriction plus early time-restricted feeding compared with the dietary caloric restriction alone. And they also used a behavioral weight loss intervention with it. So they had 81 patients, mostly women, around 38 years old. BMI was 34 kilograms per meter squared, where they were randomized to the 10-hour eating window starting within 3 hours of waking. Okay, plus the caloric restriction or the caloric restriction alone, which was an attempt for a negative 35% compared to their baseline, I think. The primary outcome, body weight, measured this was a short one, 12 weeks. Ultimately, the weight loss was about the same between groups at week 12. It was, again, about 5 to 6% body weight between the two. Then they checked again at week 39, and it was like 4.5 to 5%. They got even closer. So as time went on, the groups got together. And again, not statistically significant. There was no differences in body composition, adherence, which is important, ultimately, which we're trying to do, energy intake, physical activity, hemoglobin A1C, one of our chronic measurements of average sugar levels, or lipids, which is cholesterol, when they check those at week 12. So thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of goes back to what we said. I think we just need to get, it's silly even arguing over this anymore. The mm-hmm. zealots are going to go by the wayside. I mean, they'll still convince people. And I think, again, I'm not saying fasting's a bad idea. I have patients that do it. I think you just need to know it's not magic. It's just a tool. That's it. If you believe in magical thinking, you try to convince other people that there's magical stuff. You're going to do harm, because there's going to be a lot of people that will fail it, and they're going to think that they're broken.
Yeah,
so understand the principles, understand it's a tool. And that's it.
And it can be combined with any other dietary strategies that you need to do on a personal basis. It can be a part. I don't know how much you do, but I have a lot of patients who do pretty well with more of this sort of time-restricted feed. It really does help them in a more structured manner. So they say, hey, look, I don't start eating till 10 a.m. I stop eating at 6. It really helps me. And they do okay with that. I don't have a lot of people that do more of the real intermittent fasting where they fast for a day and stuff. I don't have a lot of people. I think if we did that, have you ever tried to do that? You?
No, I've never done it like that. I get hangry.
That's what I was getting at. So anytime Spencer and I even come close to fasting, now we also don't have a lot of adiposity, right? So we don't have a lot of leptin, and we probably get a lot of ghrelin or hunger hormone. Yeah, you have more adiposity than me. That's for damn sure. Anyways, but you know, we get hangry. And so, you know, our families and our coworkers don't let us go very long, without eating these days. We're generally pretty nice until we go without food.
Very nice. Too nice, actually. I think we're too nice even to nurses and whatever that we work with. And then sometimes we get taken advantage of because we're too nice, because we're trying to be friendly. And then when we actually need something done, and we start yelling. But this happened my first year as an attending, trying to, you know, the drug reps would bring in meals, and they would always come on time. I'm like, all right, I need to get my food. Otherwise I'm going to be pissed here soon. And they didn't show up for whatever reason. And I was like, okay, what's going on here? And there was something so silly that the nurse like didn't do something that I wanted her to do. And I was like, whoever it was, I don't remember. I don't remember exactly who it was. Sarah, that's not her name. She's listening. Sarah, where is XYZ? I don't know what it was. It was some document or something. And she's like, oh, Dr. Spencer, it's something. I don't know where it is. And I blew up. And then after I ate, I was like, oh, sorry. I yelled at you. And she was like, you know, you're really angry when you're hungry. And I was just like, oh my God, I can't wait to tell my brother and my wife. Cause like they always say, my wife's always like, don't worry about me. Please eat something. And don't even try to wait for me, because if you wait and you become a jerk, it's not worth it. Just please eat. Yeah, that happened. We've had family trips. Either my brother gets hungry, he starts yelling. Then I'll start making fun of my brother, and he'll start yelling at me. Or I'll get hungry, and then I start swearing at the family.
And then Spencer ruins the vacation.
It actually gets really bad. Maybe one day.
Everyone knows this about us. And so I guess our other disclaimer is, not only can intermittent fasting and time-restricted feeding be a legitimate tool to help you out in your dietary efforts, but also be aware of your own mental health with it. Because if you get hangry because of the hormones that drive our appetite and hunger, and it causes issues, then it's probably not for you. So it's not really for us. I can do a little time-restricted feeding, but you know what? It's not true, because I generally always have coffee, and I usually put something in there. So it's not truly
There will be people out there that say it takes about 1 to 2 weeks, and I do agree. That's what my patients say. They say it takes 1 to 2 weeks. Then you get used to it. Then you won't become as hangry, and that's possible. And you actually do see some appetite, some of the the ghrelin, leptin changes, neuropeptide changes, or PYY changes.
To help
it happens after a couple weeks. Yeah. So maybe. So if you do it, you might have to give it a couple weeks.
It's kind of like people talking about being keto adapted and all that stuff.
I mean, yeah. So anyway, all right. Is there anything else we need to mention here?
Well, what else? You were talking about
fatty liver.
Well, so
anything else? Fatty liver disease.
So non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, you know, again, and pretty much anything that's related to this, I'll go back to, it's still ultimately, while there maybe, now I haven't seen any studies that show this, and I did the whole systematic review for upcoming guidelines that are going to be published. There was nothing to make us say, hey, everyone should be fasting for fatty liver health. The bottom line for fatty liver, I can tell you with a very high degree of confidence, because I had to do this systematically, is that it is the energy reduction and the weight loss, the fat loss that improves it. And actually, more than any type of fasting, if there's any other thing with dietary efforts, it's some of the dietary quality, you know, eating, getting your fat from nuts and seeds and fish rather than saturated fats and things like that. No, not definitely
coconut
not
oil
butter.
And butter.
No, definitely not that. Replacing those with nuts, seeds, high fiber, low carb type of patterns, more vegetables, that sort of thing.
We'll do a whole podcast probably on
probably in a few weeks, because I'll bet
calling
you. I'll tell you that guideline's getting published during our.
Are they
going
to change the name to metabolic associated?
Not for this. Nah. No, not for this. Just because it's so ingrained. I think we mention it in there, but.
Honestly, I think it's semantics. Whatever.
It is semantics. It's just people, we have other semantics that we'll have to discuss. We could have a whole podcast on semantics of health
on semantics.
Terms. Yeah.
Semantics about semantics.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's about it for this podcast. Please make sure you subscribe, like, and comment, or leave a review if you're enjoying this. And
don't leave a review if you're not enjoying
if you're not, go hang out with Jason Fong and all those other crazy people. Go have fun with the magical thinking. Anyway, thanks for listening.
All right. Bye-bye.